Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
You know, kids can do anything, you know, if they're left alone. We went to babysitters and stuff, and we were just hanging out with, there was different groups of kids, 5-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and 15-year-olds. And the 15-year-olds were like doing stuff like having kissing contests and smoking weed. And the little kids would run and say, I want to do that, and take the little joint left over, whatever it's called, a roach, and smoke it, and or try to. And that's what it was like when I was a kid.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, Matt Pride was a good kid, but once he experimented with marijuana, his life turned upside down. Matt's struggles hit every member of his family pretty hard, especially his mom. And during his battle with chemical addiction, she learned the real value of tough, authentic love. She also discovered a faith in Jesus Christ in the process. Kathy Pride now travels the country. She's talking to parents about the dangers of drug and alcohol use and abuse. She also warns about the reality that even good kids can make some bad decisions in this area. Well, Kathy joins me in studio today to share her story with us. When the Drug War Hits Home is our theme today on Homeward, and it starts right now. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today, Kathy Pride with us. We're talking about when the drug war hits home, and believe me, it hit her home in a big way. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to bring you a lot of hope and some training and some encouragement. And actually, maybe we're going to prod you a little bit to do something about your own kids. You know what? 85% of kids will try alcohol by age 18. Almost 50% of kids will try an illegal drug. That might be marijuana. It might be something else. By the way, alcohol is an illegal drug as well. But drugs are at your doorstep, and way too many parents are either ignorant or in denial. We brought Kathy in from Danville, Pennsylvania, to come into the studios here at Homeward and talk about it. Kathy lives in Danville with her husband, Howie, and their kids. Welcome to our program.
Thank you.
You're just wearing a great outfit. You know, that's the problem with radio. You know, I have a radio face, so they don't, you know, have to look at me. But you have this beautiful outfit. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you're all bright and shiny, but the truth is that you are an incredibly honest and vulnerable person about a struggle with your son, Matt. He was drug addicted at somewhat of a young age, and you decided actually to write a book called Winning the Drug War at Home. Talk to us about Matt.
You know, Matt is a great kid, and I have to say we started this journey with him about 7 years ago, and we've almost come full circle. I'll say when he recognizes Jesus and gets to know him in a very personal way, that's when the dots will really be connected. But he's just bright and tenacious and turned that direction the wrong way when he was on the cusp of his 16th birthday.
Well, marijuana kind of became his drug of choice in the teenage years, and it really changed this kind of sweet little boy into something very different in high school.
Yeah, he became just a belligerent, almost monster. I mean, I hate to refer to my baby that way, but, you know, we just didn't know what to expect from him in a given day. Belligerence, anger, hostility.
Well, you know what? A lot of kids are like that, though.
Oh,
I mean, that's
sure.
You know, you could have named the Burns household with three daughters at one time in their season. You know, now they don't seem to be as belligerent and hostile. But, you know, there were moments with that. But in essence, what you're talking about here is marijuana. Now, some parents would say, I smoked marijuana when I was going to college. And no, I wouldn't suggest it for my kids, but it didn't turn me into one of these kind of people. It actually helped me study or helped me focus. Mm-hmm. So they don't see it as big a deal as other drugs. That's not your opinion.
That's not my opinion. And I have to say that I fell into that camp for a period of time, too. You know, I tried pot when I was a teenager in the 70s. It did nothing for me. It actually put me to sleep. And I would argue that it's a huge drug of amotivation. And we saw that, is that it just kills one's motivation and desire. And we had that experience as well. But the drug of the 70s, 80s is not the same drug of the year 2006. And hello, it's illegal. So that in and of itself should be a discussion. But you wouldn't believe how many parents said to me, oh, and even professionals, it's only marijuana. What's the big deal?
Yeah. And yet you mentioned a couple of things. One is that it produces not only a motivation, but it produces something called a motivational behavior with a lot of people. Some people know, but a lot of people it does, where their brain kind of becomes lazy and slows them down. The other thing that you mentioned I think is very important for our listeners to hear right from the beginning is that it's not the same marijuana that some people didn't inhale, in quotes, in, you know, in the 70s or whatever. It's oftentimes laced with something else, and it's 5 to 20% stronger. Mm-hmm. So Matt was smoking a different drug in reality than you were when you experimented it and fell asleep.
Yes.
And that's a very important comment for us to think through with this. Now, you said that you knew his addiction was overtaking his life when there was a change of behavior. He actually sold his prized snowboard to get some money. Talk about that.
Yeah, I made that discovery, or he shared that with me very late in the process and in this journey. But that was more, I think, of a bottom for him than actually being arrested. He still had this thumb his nose up kind of attitude towards they can't make me stop. But when he sold his snowboard, and he is a passionate, passionate snowboarder. He is crazy. He broke his arm because he attempted a 900, okay? 2.5 complete revolutions, if you've forgotten your math, off a jump made out of snow bigger than my house.
Right.
Didn't quite land it when he called me on his way to the hospital and was talking to me and said, well, Mom, I'm at the hospital. I said, well, you're conscious. You're talking to me. So I at least know that you're probably still okay. What happened? What did you break? I knew he had broken something, but this passion and passion for the outdoors and the powder, when the snowboard was gone and he had placed a higher priority on getting high than that, that just was a huge message.
Boy, that is a huge message. And you do see that. You see that with really good kids. You see them kind of selling stuff off. You see them changing friends, changing behavior. You said now he was oftentimes belligerent and whatnot, and that oftentimes does take place to a greater extent. And at the same time, you also admit pretty much at the beginning of this conversation that you're having with people that in many ways your anger and control contributed, you thought, to Matt's problem. And I want you to talk about that.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. And I tease people. I say, you know, this book could very well have been subtitled or Confessions of a Control Freak Mother.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up absolutely on the theology of self-sufficiency, being taught that when confronted with a problem, I could fix it. And first of all, you know, I'll say also that this experience is what knocked me off that horse of self-sufficiency and brought me into a faith relationship with Christ. But it was a long time before I really started to behave in sync with that and give up that control. I had control, thank you very much, and I was going to exercise that control. And I absolutely couldn't, but I tried for a long time.
Well, you know, control is one thing, and it seems like so many parents do that, especially when they find that their kids are doing some behaviors that are at-risk behaviors. And obviously, Matt was doing that. So you go into the control mode. The best of people do that. Anger is another one. That's another emotion that people tend to struggle with in this. You get angry at yourself. You get angry at your spouse. You get angry at Matt. You get angry at the system. You get angry at his friends. And basically, you were angry at all those people.
All of them. I was angry at my husband. We couldn't agree on how to approach this. I was angry at Matt for how could you be so stupid to make these choices. I was angry at myself for falling into the same behavior patterns over and over again. You know, the definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just angry at the system, angry then that a DA was going to make a point of Matt because he could set an example, use him as an example. So, yeah.
Well, you had some encounters with the law. You had some encounters with probation officers at school, things like that. That's a world that a lot of parents are going, I have no idea that my good kid is going to be in this place. What was it like sitting in a room? Let's take maybe one time with a probation officer where the probation officer says, I'm tired of you, Matt. You've not been following through. This is it. We're going to send you in this direction. You and, I think, Howie were sitting there.
We were.
How were you feeling at that moment?
Shocked, but not shocked at the same time. I think we understood that it was going to get to this point. Matt was totally blown away. He really thought he could diss the system and get away with it.
Most kids who are addicted to drugs think that,
too. You know, that they're not going to catch up with me. I don't really have to listen to them. Also, convincing himself, that voice inside his head said, oh, I can stop at any time. Yet we knew, and he did realize, and he shared this later, that he also knew he really couldn't. And that was when it overtook his life, and really became a problem. But just horror that they wanted to sentence him to a boot camp, charge us $5,000 a month to send him there, and he would be with sex offenders, arsonists, burglars, and, you know, really a choice group of people. And we pleaded at that point for a therapeutic alternative.
Right. And actually, in a neat way, they said, okay, we'll give you this shot.
They did.
And that was a part of the healing, which I want to get into later. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about when the drug war hits home.
Good conversation today here on the Homeward Broadcast. So glad you've joined us. This is parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns' discussion with author Kathy Pride. She's written a book called Winning the Drug War at Home, and it's a true story about what happened with her son and how Matt's drug involvement brought the whole family together, actually, ironically, but it took a lot of work, it took a lot of prayer, and it took a lot of healing. And if this is your story right now, you're resonating with this, we encourage you to visit our online resource center if you're not there already at homeward.com. When you go to the radio section, you'll find a guest list, and on the guest list, you'll see all the different guests that we've had on the program this year, and Kathy Pride is today's guest. Just hit the link there and on her name, and that will take you right to her website. You can learn more about her ministry and also about her writing. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Part two of Jim's discussion for today is coming up, so do stay with us.
If you've ever watched a high school student try to eat a dozen donuts and down a 2-liter bottle of soda in one sitting, you know that kids are prone to take some pretty crazy risks. But there's a growing concern about kids and the excessive consumption of alcohol that's giving parents cause for concern. I'm Jim Burns from Homeward. Binge drinking is where a kid will try to consume 5 or more alcoholic beverages in a row, one right after the other. As you can imagine, the physical consequences can be rather dramatic. But there are other concerns associated with binge drinking. 39% of kids who are binge drinkers say they drink alone. 58% drink when they are upset, and 30% drink when they're bored. Alcohol can be a dangerous weapon in the hands of a bored, lonely teenager. Don't let your son or your daughter become a statistic. For a free copy of my brand new tip sheet called How to Talk to Your Kids About Drugs and Alcohol, go to homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns. Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Kathy Pride with us today when the drug war hits home. By the way, as I said before, drugs are at your doorsteps for your kids, and it's a different world. We were 6 and 11 and 12 and 18, but we weren't their age in terms of the availability, the cheap side of it, and also in some ways the popularity. In certain ways, alcohol and drug addiction has kind of remained the same, but in other ways, kids are using more and more. For example, they're using more and more prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. Today, we're talking with Kathy as we talk about Matt, her son and good kid, who basically went a different direction. Kathy is a writer, a speaker, a parent educator, advocate for people who need healing and hope. Also, prevention for some of you mm-hmm. who aren't there yet, but could be. She's a mother of 4 children, including her son, Matt, who we're talking about. They live in Danville, Pennsylvania, kids and her husband, Howie. Kathy, you say that the more that Matt withdrew from you, the more you kind of prodded and begged. And it seems to be a natural reaction of a desperate parent. And you were a desperate parent.
Oh, I was.
So prodding
yeah,
and begging, too. You're saying kind of doesn't work.
No, my husband had figured that out. He stayed separate yet firm, and the more Matt would retreat, the more I would chase him.
Right.
And I had nagging down to a finer art form. It was really pitiful.
Yeah. But isn't it amazing when sometimes some of the worst of us come out when our kids are struggling and mm-hmm. we are just absolutely panicked.
Mm-hmm.
So we go into a mode, even sometimes saying, you know, this probably doesn't work. I would not share with somebody else to go do this with their kid, but we tend to do it. How did you figure out not to do this?
It consistently didn't work. I was consistently looking for that different response. And finally, at one point, I just, I think it was really the power of prayer. There were other people that were just cheering me on and I knew were praying for me and had shared their experiences, and something just clicked. And I figured, well, it's working for my husband. Wake up.
Yeah.
You know, try something a little bit different.
And that's, you know, sometimes we have to admit that, especially if we are kind of more into the controlling side. Now, I experienced a lot of denial during this time. Most parents in this situation are either in denial or ignorant that it's mm-hmm. taking place mm-hmm. with their kids. You know, they kind of really need a wake-up call. Tell us what denial looks like. Tell us why denial is so dangerous.
Well, it's easy to rationalize just about any behavior or any choice, and it just leads you down the wrong path. That you end up making your decisions based on lies then. And, you know, this was my baby. He was a smart kid. He was a star athlete. Him using drugs, oh, no, this isn't going to happen to us. You know, we're a professional family. He was a good kid. He was a star student. And anyway, it's not as bad as the other stuff. So you start to get into these areas of shades of gray, and it can become very, very dangerous.
And when that happens, how does somebody wake up?
Well, hopefully they'll wake up quicker than I did, because I stayed like that ostrich with its head in the sand for a long period of time. And, you know, sometimes it's your child hitting their low and dragging you down along with them, you've got to reach your low too, because I absolutely was an enabler par excellence. I should have been nominated for an Oscar for my performance as an enabler, you know, and I was making excuses for him. I was shaking him. I was making sure he'd get out of bed so that he'd get to school by 11 o'clock so that that day would count for attendance, so that he wouldn't have to go to summer school, so that, you know, he could graduate on time. Graduate? You know, he could have been dead.
Yeah.
You know,
now,
so
what would you have done differently?
You know, we sent him to rehab a second time, and I would definitely go back and do that experience over again. But let me first preface this by saying, you know, as parents, we're doing the best we can at the time, you know, coming from a position of love and understanding that we have, which may be marginalized, but, you know, we just were working with the information we had at the time. We believed at that point in time that sending him to rehab a second time would be the answer. He was lying. He wasn't going to meetings. He was still smoking. He was making all kinds of bad choices, and we did an intervention at the school where actually Howie and I and the guidance counselor and the baseball coach and a couple of other individuals went, and we took him from school. He had just played a baseball game, hit a home run the day before, and we pulled him out of that setting, took him away from school, took him away from his baseball team, and sent him back to rehab. He didn't think he had a problem still at this point, so it wasn't going to make a difference, and we took him away from the activities that were self-esteem building to him. And he was so angry that when my husband drove him to rehab, he kicked the window out of the car.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in some ways what you did was you created a crisis for him.
We did.
And that's one of the things that we talk about mm-hmm. a lot if somebody is struggling with an addiction is you've got to get them to the bottom. And if they're not going to go there themselves, sometimes when a parent creates a crisis like that, pulling him out of baseball, my goodness, he's just hit a home run. You know, his whole life is centered around that. And yet one of the wisest things you could have done was say, okay, the game's over.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming with us.
Yeah, and he came back from that experience at rehab and smoked the next day. He maintains that at that point, parents of his friends who kind of knew he was smoking marijuana and to them it was not a big deal, assumed that he was doing the hard stuff. And so it destroyed his peer group, whereas their kids were actually making the same or worse choices than he was at the time. And these parents just couldn't believe that it's only marijuana you're responding this way.
Right, right. And what you're saying is, it is marijuana.
It is marijuana.
That's why I'm responding this
that's
way.
That's why.
Yeah, it's good.
Exactly.
It's kind of a tough love situation. Now, one of the things you've alluded to in our conversation has been relationship with God. God did a major reconstruction in your life, it sounds like, through all this. Tell us how that started.
He'd been calling my name for a long time. I just had that Shrek's earwax in my ears, and I just couldn't hear him. I just was plugged up. But that spring that we did that intervention with Matt, my older son had just finished his first year in college, and I was in Maui with my mom and Chris and the two girls. And, you know, Maui's a gorgeous place. If you've had the opportunity to visit or see pictures, it was gorgeous. And I felt like I was in hell. It was just a tempest. It was chaos. It was screaming, yelling, fighting, broken relationships. Here's my older son who's just barely made it through his first year of college. There's my mom who's a chronically unhappy and she was angry person. My girls are fighting. Matt's in rehab. And it was just a nightmare. Well, Chris was watching the Today Show. He's actually channel surfing. Saw the Today Show. Bruce Wilkinson was on. It was 2001. He had just written The Prayer of Jabez. And he calls from the other room, Mom, you got to read this book. I'm like, book schmuck, no more books. They're not working. It's not helping. I had an attitude, just a horrible attitude. Long story short, ended up in a Walden Books. A woman came in looking for the book. I had forgotten about it. Ended up purchasing, read it. It started to change the way I approach things, the paradigms, the way they hit. I got back home. A friend who had been praying for me through this time handed me a card. She knew what our family was going through and said, our pastor has just finished preaching a set of messages on this. Of course, on the card is the Prayer of Jabez. And due to a totally unexpected series of events, I ended up with her in church the following Sunday, and there was a sharing time, and I got up and took the mic, and I'm just sobbing and coughing and talking about how my life is falling apart, my marriage is fractured, my kid's in rehab, and it just stinks, and right here, right now, I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And then sat down and said, what just happened?
Wow.
What was that? And she leaned over. I love to tell this part of the story, and says, I can't wait to see what God's going to do with your big mouth.
Well, you know what? He's doing great stuff, and I appreciate it so much. There is so much more to the story to talk about, but it's going to have to be next time. We've got to close for now. I appreciate you coming, and you'll have to come back next time so we can take this conversation a bit further.
And that concludes part one of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with Kathy Pride here on the Homeward Broadcast. Our theme today, When the Drug War Hits Home. And if you look at statistics and actually just talk to people you know at church or at your school, in your neighborhood, you're finding out that the drug war is hitting more and more homes in the United States and taking a pretty serious toll. We're grateful that Kathy Pride has put her story into a book, talking about her situation with her son Matt and what they've been through. And we'll have part two of this conversation on the next edition of the Homeward Broadcast. You can get resources to help you in this season as well when you visit our online resource center today at homeward.com. So check us out online at homeward.com.
I want to mention a couple things before we close this program about drug and alcohol abuse. And by the way, I believe that alcohol is a drug. It's mood altering. It's mind altering. It's actually, it's also a food because it has some calorie. But you know what's also toxic? Alcohol. So alcohol and drugs. We're not just talking about marijuana today. Here's the question. What happens when kids take drugs like Matt was taking drugs or especially marijuana? The fact of the matter is that when kids take drugs, they quit learning how to cope with stress properly. And in fact, when people go into rehab, they have to go all the way back. They can get off detox, but they have to go all the way back to whenever they quit learning how to cope with stress because that's what they learned. And so they're taking these drugs because, frankly, it works and it deadens their pain. And when it deadens their pain, their boyfriend, their girlfriend, their mom, their dad, grades, you know, aren't working. They didn't first attempt to take it to deaden their pain, but by the way, it works. So as parents, we have to get out of denial. Parents, don't be ignorant. Don't be in denial. Prevention is the key. So if your kids are not taking drugs or you don't think they're taking drugs, then you know what? Read a book. This is a good book to read. Read a book, go to a seminar, but get the information because we now know that studies tell us that the more positive drug education kids receive from home, then the less at risk they're going to be. And so, you know, start young, start at five and start talking through that process. Still doesn't mean that they're not going to potentially experiment. Also, if you even think your kids are struggling with drug or alcohol use or abuse, this is the time to, the way I'd say it, Roger, is suck it up and confront the issue. And don't do it in anger, but do it in help. But don't let them get past you on this kind of stuff. And obviously what you need to do is seek help. So I would suggest strongly, as the Bible says, where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So seek help. There are experts in your area that you may not know because it may not be an issue in your life until now who can help you. One of the ways to do that, obviously, is start reading and start listening. That's an important part of what you can do as a parent. Nobody sent us to parent training school. So what we need to do is learn and learn well.
That's a good point, Jim, because there's not a parent among us, anyone listening to the program right now, who when their child was born said, boy, when they hit 17 and they become a drug addict or they have a drug conviction, what am I going to do? We don't think in those terms. And so when this does happen, it's important for us to get counsel, to get the information that Dr. Jim Burns was talking about. When you visit our online resource center at homeward.com, remember there is no subscription fee, no monthly charge for you to access the materials that are there. There are some books that are available for purchase, but the majority of the stuff that's available online is free. And we are able to do so because of your prayers and faithful financial support. Here at the end of the year, would you consider making a gift of $100 or $500, even $1,000 or more to help support the Ministry of Homeward? You can do so through the mail when you write to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, where the swallows go, the zip code 92693. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.